fight.
Chapter 25. It was, Booster Terek thought, about as chaotic aboard the Errant Venture as he'd ever seen it. And considering this was the Errant Venture he was talking about, that was really saying something. They were all over the place. New Republic techs and workers and officer types, thousands of them, crawling around every corner of his Star Destroyer. Fixing things, adding things, taking things out, upgrading things, and occasionally changing things around just for the fun of it. His own people had been overridden, nudged aside, superseded, or flat-out run over as this oversized rancor of a restoration crew lumbered through his ship. And moving around the center of it, like the single calm spot in the middle of a circle storm, was General Bell Iblis.
5 more warships arrived in the system last night,
a harried-looking aide was saying, hurrying to keep up with Bell Iblis as the general strode briskly along the starboard 16 weapons emplacement corridor. Booster, with his longer legs, had less of a problem in that department. Still, in his opinion, Bell Iblis had a lot more energy than anyone had any business having this early in the morning.
The Freedom's Fury, Spirit of Mindor, Starline Warrior, Stellar Sentinel, and Welling's Revenge.
Good, Bell Iblis said, stopping beside a turbolaser monitor panel.
What about the Garfin and Belladine II?
No word on them yet, the aide said, checking his datapad. I've also heard rumors that the Webley's here, but so far they haven't checked in.
They're here, Booster spoke up. Captain Winger is, anyway. Those mechanical fingers of hers leave pretty distinctive marks on metal ale tubes.
The aide's eyes darkened.
All incoming ships are supposed to check in immediately.
It's all right,
Bell Iblis calmed him.
Don't worry. They'll surface in plenty of time. Alex probably just wanted her crew to get some rest before the orders started flying.
They're not the only ones who could use some rest, Booster muttered under his breath.
Bell Iblis frowned slightly, as if only now noticing the big man's presence.
Was there something you wanted, Terek? He asked.
Just wondering when the work on my ship will be finished, Booster said.
We're almost there, Bell Iblis said. Lieutenant?
Looks like the major refitting will be completed inside of 12 hours, the younger man confirmed, studying his datapad. There may be a few odds and ends left, but they can be finished on the way to Yaga Minor.
Bell Iblis looked at Booster.
Was there anything else?
He asked.
Yeah, there was,
Booster said. He stopped, looking significantly at the aide. Bell Iblis took the hint.
Lieutenant, go check on the number 7 tractor beam emplacement, he said. Make sure the balance adjustments are being made properly.
Yes, sir, the aide said,
throwing a speculative look at Booster. He headed at a quick walk down the corridor.
Why don't we step in here out of the way?
Bell Iblis suggested, crossing to a door with the bright red markings of an emergency med station. They went inside.
Up to now, you've been pretty quiet about what your plan is for this little raid,
Booster said when the door was sealed again behind them.
I think it's about time I heard some details.
There's not much to tell,
Bell Iblis said.
We'll be taking the Errant Venture in past their sentry line, and hopefully through their main defense perimeter. Once we're inside, the rest of the task force will come in behind us from hyperspace and attack the perimeter. If we're lucky, the Imperials will be so busy with them, they won't give us a second look.
That assumes their first look doesn't pin us to the wall, of course,
Booster pointed out darkly.
Assuming that, what then?
Yaga Minor has a peculiarity that, as far as I know, is unique among Imperial installations,
Bell Iblis said.
There are a pair of Outrider computer stations set up at the end of a corridor walkway tube that extends about 100 meters out from the main orbiting ubiquitous station.
Booster frowned.
Odd design.
The idea was to give high-ranking civilian researchers access to the computer record system without having to let them into the ubiquitous base proper,
Bill Iblis told him.
Grand Moff Tarkin ran a lot of his more private stuff through Yagga Minor, and he didn't want his political enemies getting even a glimpse of what he was up to.
Okay, so there's a convenient remote connection to the computer,
Booster said.
I don't suppose it happens to have an equally convenient access hatchway where we can get to it.
There are hatchways, but unfortunately they're not at all convenient,
Bell Iblis said, his voice turning grim.
We'll probably have to blast a hole in the side of the walkway tube and send in our slicers and vac suits.
Booster snorted.
Oh, right. Blow a hole in the side of the station. That'll sure go unnoticed.
It could,
Bell Iblis said.
The main force will be firing barrages of proton torpedoes at the time. The Imperials may assume that was one that got through.
And if they don't?
Bell Iblis shrugged.
Then you and I and the rest of the Air Adventures crew start earning our pay the hard way. We'll have to hold them off long enough for the slicers to pull up a copy of the Ka-Moss document and transmit it out to the attacking ships.
Booster snorted again.
Huh. No offense, General, but that has to be the worst plan I've ever heard in my life. What happens to us once we've got the document?
Bell Iblis looked him straight in the eye.
What happens to us doesn't matter,
he said bluntly.
If they accept our surrender, fine. If not, they turn the errant venture into scrap around us.
Hold it a second,
Booster said, frowning. Buried in among all that breathtakingly lousy strategy, he'd suddenly noticed a highly important word.
What do you mean, us? I thought you were going to be out there with the main fleet.
Bell Iblis shook his head.
This ship is the key to the operation,
he said quietly.
This is the ship that has to survive long enough to first get the Ka-Moss document, and then punch it out through whatever jamming the Imperials have going. This is where I'm needed the most, so this is where I'll be.
Now wait just one rod mucking minute,
Booster growled, pulling himself up to his full 1.9 meter height.
This is my ship. You told me I would still be her captain.
You're still the captain,
Bell Iblis agreed.
I'm simply the admiral.
Booster let out a long, hissing breath. He should have known Bell Iblis hadn't really given in on anything. He should have known it.
And if I refuse to give you command?
Bell Iblis lifted his eyebrows slightly. Booster nodded, a sour taste in his mouth. With the errant venture crawling with Bell Iblis' people, the question wasn't even worth answering.
Right,
he muttered.
I knew I'd regret this.
You can stay here if you want,
Bell Iblis offered.
I'm sure Coruscant would compensate you for...
Forget it,
Booster bit out.
This is my ship, and you're not taking it into combat without me. Period.
Bell Iblis smiled faintly.
I understand,
he said.
Believe me, I understand. Was there anything else?
No, that ought to about do it for now,
Booster said glumly.
You might want to see if you could come up with a better plan in the next 3 days.
I'll try,
Bell Iblis promised. Turning, he headed for the door.
Wait a second,
Booster said, as a new thought struck him.
You say we're going to blow a hole in that Outrider computer station. What happens if someone's in there at that time?
I'm not expecting anyone to be there,
Bell Iblis told him.
I doubt it's used much anymore. Besides, I can't see any other way to do this.
But what if there is someone?
Booster persisted.
You said yourself the place was only used by civilians. You blow a hole in the wall and you're going to kill them.
A shadow seemed to cross Belliblis' face.
Yes,
he said quietly.
I know.
Well, Cliff said, consulting his chrono. It's been 4 hours. What do you think? Another 2 before the panic call comes? Navit shrugged, running through a quick mental calculation of his own. He and Cliff had been conspicuously elsewhere at the time, just in case back checks were made. But according to Pensen, the subtle transfer of their little organic time bombs to the Bothan Tech's clothing had gone as smooth as spun gemweb. 4 hours now since those techs had vanished into the Drevstarn shield generator building. Given them another hour to make their presence known, 2 more after that for the Bothans to become fully aware of the magnitude of the problem and to exhaust all other possibilities for dealing with it. I'm guessing at least 3, he told Cliff. They aren't going to be in a hurry to call in off-worlders.
Well, the stuff's ready whenever they do, Cliff said with a shrug.
Across the shop, the annoyingly cheery chime rang out as a door swung open. Settling his face into what Cliff had dubbed their earnest but stupid expression, he looked up and felt the expression freeze across his face. There, walking into the shop, were their 2 new rep military types. Beside him, Cliff made a faint choking sound in the back of his throat.
Quiet,
Navit murmured, adding a slightly dopey smile to his expression and bounding eagerly around the end of the counter toward their visitors.
A day of fun and profit to you, or however that goes,
he said, keying his voice to the pleasant yet vaguely pushy tone of a merchant determined to make a sale.
Can I help you?
Just looking, thanks,
one of the men said as they wandered down the row of cages. They were 2 of a kind, Navit noted. Both somewhat short, both with slightly graying brown hair. The speaker with brown eyes, while his companion had green. And seen up close, brown eyes especially looked familiar.
Sure,
Navit said, hovering nearby in traditional shopkeeper style.
Anything special you're looking for?
Not really,
green eyes put in, gazing down into the Pulpian cage.
What are these? Pulpians?
Sure are,
Navit said. Both of them had faint Corellian accents, too.
You know your pet stock!
I know a little,
Green Eyes said, gazing at him with a glint in his eye that Navit didn't care for at all.
I thought Bothans are allergic to Pulpians.
Yeah, some of them are, I suppose,
Navit said with a shrug.
And yet you brought them to Bothui?
Navit put on a bewildered expression.
Well, sure,
he said, trying to sound slightly wounded.
Just 'cause some people are allergic to something doesn't mean someone else won't want to buy it. Not all Bothans are allergic to them either. And anyway, there are lots more people here than just Bothans.
He broke off as brown eyes sneezed.
There, see?
He said, jabbing a finger toward the other, as if the sneeze was a sort of vindication.
Probably something in here he's allergic to, too. But you still came in, right? And I'll bet I can find something that'll make a really great pet for you.
The door chime sounded again, and Navit turned to see a thin old woman come in. The fringe companion Cliff had mentioned?
Hi there, he said, nodding to her. A day of fun and profit to you. Can I help you?
I hope so, she said. You have any ratter thists?
Navit felt his throat tighten. What in blazes was a ratter thist?
Don't think I ever heard of them, he said carefully,
knowing better than to pretend knowledge he didn't have.
I can check the list, though, see if we can get them from somewhere. What kind of critter are they?
They're not all that popular, really,
the woman said. Her voice was casual, but she was watching him as closely as Green Eyes was.
They're small and agile, with tan-striped fur and retractable claws. They're sometimes used as livestock border guards in mountainous terrain.
Oh, sure,
Cliff called from the far side of the counter, leaning casually on it. There was no sign of the datapad he undoubtedly had going out of sight under the flat surface.
You're talking about Cordulean Chrises.
Oh, Cordulean Chrises,
Nabbit said, with a knowing nod. He'd never heard of those, either, but Cliff's cue was obvious.
Sure, I just never heard of him by that other name before. Cliff, can we get him in?
Let me check,
Cliff said, making a show of pulling the datapad up onto the counter and pretending to turn it on.
What are these?
Brown Eyes called. He was standing over the Mokran tank, looking in with a somewhat leery expression.
Baby Mokrans,
Nava told him, stepping to his side and looking fondly down through the clear plastic at the tiny lizards scrabbling restlessly around on top of each other.
Just whelped this morning. Cute, huh?
Adorable,
Brown Eyes said, not sounding like he meant it.
Here it is, Cliff called. Cordulean Chrises. Let's see.
There was a beep from Navit's comlink.
Excuse me,
he said, pulling out the instrument, a sudden feeling of dread coming over him. If this was the call they were expecting.
Hello?
Is this Proprietor Navit of the Exoticalia Pet Emporium?
A stiff but harried-sounding Bothan voice asked.
Sure is,
Nabbit said, striving for earnest but stupid cheerfulness. It was the call, all right, and with all the rotten luck, it had come with a pair of new rep agents standing right there listening.
What can I do for you?
We have a small but troublesome insect infestation problem,
the Bothan said.
Our attempts to eliminate them have so far proved futile. As a dealer in exotic animals, it was thought you might have some suggestions.
Probably, Nabbit said. Cliff and I did some bug squash work before we got into the pet business. What kind are they?
They're unfamiliar to our experts,
the other said, sounding disgusted.
All we know is that they're very small, do not respond to any of our extermination methods, and at random intervals all begin making a loud humming noise.
Could be Skronkies,
Nabbit suggested doubtfully.
They make a pretty annoying noise. Or aphids. Oh, wait a minute. I'll bet they're metal mites. You got any electronics or heavy machinery in the area?
There was a sort of strangled sound from the comlink.
A considerable amount of it, yes. What do metal mites do?
Chew through metal, Nabbit said. Of course, they don't actually chew through the stuff. They got enzymes that,
I don't need the physiological details. How do we eliminate them?
Well, let's see,
Nabbit said, rubbing his chin thoughtfully for the benefit of the new rep agents. Green Eyes had that glint in his eyes again.
First thing you gotta do is some spraying. You got any, any Cortrahan around? That's Cordialine Trahansicol, if you need the whole name.
I don't know, but I'm sure we can get some made up.
Before you do, make sure you got someone who knows what they're doing,
Navit warned.
Won't do you a bit of good to just slather the stuff around.
There was a brief pause.
What do you mean?
I mean you can't just slather the stuff around, that's what,
Navit said, letting a little impatience creep into his voice.
You gotta get all the spots where they're gonna feed, but also leave them enough bare spots.
He sighed.
Look, this isn't something for amateurs to mess around with. We got the equipment to spray with. We use them to disinfect our cages in stock. You get us to Cortran, and Cliff and me could do the job for you.
Impossible, the Bothan said sharply. Offworlders cannot be permitted in that area.
Oh, okay, Navid shrugged. He'd expected the automatic rejection of his first offer. Just trying to help. You'll have plenty of time to get rid of a single brood before it does much damage.
He frowned, as if something had suddenly occurred to him.
It is just a single brood, isn't it? When they hum, do they all make one note, or are there a couple different pitches?
There was a short pause.
There are several different notes. 5, perhaps 6.
Navid let out a low whistle.
5 of them? Oh, boy. Hey, Cliff, they got 5 different broods in there. Well, good luck to you. I sure hope you can get someone on them before the brood war starts.
Sheesh. He keyed off the comlink.
5 broods, he murmured, shaking his head. Wow.
Shocking,
Green Eyes agreed, the glint still in his eyes.
Pretty exotic pests, metal mites.
They come in on ships sometimes,
Navid said, wishing he could read that face. Green Eyes was suspicious, all right. But was he suspicious of Navid personally, or just the general metal mite situation?
I've heard of them riding Minox, too. Sort of scavenging along behind as they...
There was another beep from his comlink.
Excuse me again, he said, pulling it out. Hello?
This is Field Control at Trebaya again.
The same Bothan voice came, sounding disgusted.
I spoke with you a few moments ago.
Yeah, sure, Navid said. What can I do for you?
I've been instructed to ask how much you would charge for getting rid of the metal mites.
Oh, not much,
Navid said, carefully suppressing a smile. From the tone of Trebaya's voice, it was clear the sudden official change of heart wasn't his idea.
Matter of fact, as long as you spring for the Cortran... Well, look, the guy at Customs said we're gonna need a special merchant's license to sell our pets outside Drevstan. You get us that license, and we'll do it for free.
For free?
Trebaya repeated, the pitch of his voice dropping a few steps.
Why so generous?
Listen, I've seen what metal mites can do,
Navid said stiffly.
If you think I want to run a business in a town where they've gotten a foothold, you can think again. And the faster we get started, the easier it'll be to get rid of them. You get us a merchant's license and the juice, and we'll call it even.
I believe that can be arranged,
Trebaya said reluctantly.
You and your equipment will have to submit to a full scan before you can be allowed into the facility.
No problem, Navid said. Actually, this will be kind of fun. Just like old times. When you want us?
A land speeder will pick you up in 30 minutes,
the Bothan said. He still didn't sound happy, but there was a cautious note of relief in his voice.
Be ready to go.
We will,
Navid promised. The Bothan clicked off without bothering to say goodbye.
Man, you just never know, do you?
Navid said philosophically, sliding the comlink away.
Sorry, folks. Did you want us to order some of those Chris's for you, ma'am? Cliff, you find anything on the lists?
Looks like we could get them from a supplier on Islo. Have them here in 2 or 3 days,
Cliff reported.
Or we could get them shipped in straight from Cordu itself. That'll probably be a little cheaper, but it'll take longer.
You want to order today?
Navid asked hopefully.
You only have to put a 10th down up front.
The old woman shook her head.
I think I'll see if anyone else in town has them in stock first.
Well, if you can't find anyone, come on back,
Cliff called as the three of them headed for the door.
We could get express service for a pretty reasonable fee.
We'll keep that in mind,
Brown Eyes promised.
Thanks. We may be back.
They filed out, passing across the front window and out of Navit's view as the door closed behind them.
"I'll just bet you will,"
he said softly to himself. He shook his head, dismissing them from his mind. Fringe lifters and even new rep agents were completely unimportant right now. What was important was that their little metal mite time bombs introduced into the shield generator tech's clothing had done their job. And now it was time for Cliff and him to do theirs.
"Let's get ready," he said, heading briskly toward the back room. "Mustn't keep the Bothans waiting."
"And here,"
General Hestiv said, keying a combination into the keypad,
"is where you'll be working."
"Okay,"
Kent said, glancing nervously down the long corridor behind them. It was a long way back to the main base, and Hestiv had assured him that hardly anyone ever came out here anymore. But there was a whole Imperial Ubiquitrate station back there, and he couldn't shake the feeling he was being watched by unfriendly eyes. With a puff of slightly stale air, the door swung open.
"There we go,"
Hestiv said, gesturing him forward.
"Go on in."
Ghent stepped into the doorway, throwing Hestiv a sideways glance as he passed. Admiral Pellion had vouched for him, he knew, but the man was still an Imperial officer, and Ghent was from the New Republic. If this Moff Deesra person wants to do away with him, this would be a perfect place to do it. And then he got his first glimpse of the room itself.
"This is your new temporary home,"
Hestiv said from behind him.
"What do you think?"
Ghent hardly heard him, could hardly believe his eyes for that matter, as he looked around the tiny room. Crammed into it were an Everest 448 data sifter, a pair of Fedakowski D-square decrypt decipherers, 5 Wickstrom K220 heavy-duty peripheral processors, a Merlin 1221 full-spectrum numerical analyzer.
"The equipment's probably nothing like what you're used to,"
Hestiv said apologetically.
"But hopefully it'll do."
And there, as a centerpiece, nothing less than a brand new Rickhouse Masterline 70 Oct Terminal. A Masterline 70!
"No, not really,"
Ghent managed, still staring goggle-eyed at the shining array. And they were going to let him have this whole room? All to himself?
"But it'll do just fine."
"Good,"
Hestiv said, crossing the room in front of him and keying open another door Ghent hadn't yet noticed.
"Your living quarters are in here, so you won't have to leave this section at all. In fact, you might want to change the coding on the door lock after I leave so that no one can accidentally walk in on you."
"Sure,"
Ghent said, his nervousness about this place already forgotten.
"I can seal it up real tight. Okay if I get started?"
"Whenever you're ready,"
Hestiv said. Dimly, Ghent was aware the other was staring at him oddly.
"You know how to get hold of me if you need anything. Good luck."
"Sure,"
Ghent said, as Hestiv stepped back through the doorway. There was another puff of air, and Ghent was alone. Dropping his carry pack to the floor, he shoved it with his foot in the general direction of the living area. Imperial moths, lurking danger, and even imminent civil wars all but forgotten. He pulled out the chair in front of the Master Line 70 and sat down. This was going to be fun. It took an entire hour of scans and examinations under the watchful eyes of the ungentle hands of what seemed to Navit to be half of Drev Starn's contingent of Bothawi security. But at last, with the obvious reluctance of a being who heartily dislikes a situation but has no better alternatives available, Field Controller Trebaia finally led him and Cliff down into the lower levels of the shield generator building, into the very center of the Drev Starn defense system.
"Impressive stuff,"
Navit commented to his glowering guards as he glanced casually around the room.
"I could see why you want to get rid of them fast."
He hoisted the tank of Cortrahan a little higher on his shoulder.
Okay,
he said, waggling his slender sprayer loosely in his hand.
First thing is for you to show me anything really delicate or critical you don't want them getting into.
We don't want them getting into any of it,
Trebiah snapped, his fur rippling.
Yeah, sure, Nabbit soothed. I just meant where do you want us to start spraying? We should do the most delicate stuff first.
Trebiah's fur rippled again.
I suppose that seems reasonable,
he said unhappily. Clearly, the last thing he wanted to do was point out the most important parts of their precious shield generator to a couple of humans.
This way.
Not that it mattered, of course. Nabbit knew perfectly well what everything in this complex was, and neither he nor Cliff needed the Bothans to point out the kill points to them. But it was something an earnest but stupid pet shop owner might be expected to ask. Besides, he was curious to see how honest the Bothans might get in the middle of a crisis like this.
You may start here,
Trebiah said, stopping and pointing to a completely non-vital backup comm console.
Okay,
Nabbit said. Apparently not very. They'd been spraying for 15 minutes, laying out the elaborate curlicue chemical trails that were the only way to effectively kill metal mites, when things finally began to get interesting.
This one next,
Trebiah said, laying a hand protectively on the edge of one of the consoles responsible for maintaining the power frequency coupling between the various poles of the planetary shield.
Right,
Nabbit said, his heart starting to beat faster as he stepped over to the console. This was it. The first blade thrust into the heart of the species whose actions had cost the Empire so much over the years. The Bothan techs had already removed the access panels. Shifting his grip subtly on the sprayer as he crouched down, Nabbit eased the tip into the maze of electronics and gave it a delicate squirt. Only this time, he left more than just the metal mite killing Cortrahan to bead up on the circuit cards and drip slowly down onto the power supplies and ventilation fan casings below. This time, his new grip had allowed the slender tank built into the sprayer handle to dribble some of its own special contents into the mix. The hour-long examination the Bothans had put their equipment through had scanned for everything those paranoid minds could have thought of. Weapons, spy equipment, explosives, poisons, sulfurics, acids, wire spinners, and probably 50 other potential threats. But nowhere in all those multiple layers of precautions had anyone thought to program a check for food. Not that anyone in the generator building would have found this particular brew even remotely appetizing. Not even the metal mites. In fact, now that the rotten little vermin had played their part, it was time for them to die. He and Cliff spent the next 2 hours moving systematically through the complex, laying down their poison trails, and at perhaps 20 carefully selected points, adding in a squirt of their liquid nutrient. By the time they finished, the thick, sweet-sour smell of the Cortrahan was almost like a physical barrier that had to be pushed aside as they walked through it.
Okay,
Nabbit said cheerfully, as they were finally escorted back into the security entrance area.
First step's done. Now all you gotta do is put a loudspeaker on that's blasting out the brood's different carrier pitches. That keeps them from talking back and forth inside their groups. And that keeps them from breeding faster so they can fight with the other broods. Gives the Cortrahan time to work. You see?
Yes,
Trebiah said, looking marginally less unhappy now that the off-worlders were no longer in direct contact with his precious machinery.
How long will this be necessary?
Oh, a week ought to do it, Nabbit said. 8 or 9 days just to be on the safe side. Some broods are harder to kill than others. Don't worry, though. They won't be eating anything during any of that. Mostly they'll just be dying.
Very well,
Trebiah agreed reluctantly.
I have only one more question, then. I'm told these pests are quite rare. How is it they were able to find their way in here?
Navit shrugged as casually as he could. The groundwork had been laid, but that didn't mean they were out of the snake pit yet. If the Bothans decided to be suspicious enough to go back in and clean out everything he and Cliff had just laid down, this whole setup would have been for nothing.
"You got me," he said. "You bring any new equipment in here in the past week or two?"
The Bothan's fur rippled uncertainly.
"There were two pieces of equipment that arrived several days ago, but both were scanned thoroughly before they were brought in."
"Yeah, but I'll bet your scanners aren't programmed for heavily metal-based life like these things,"
Navit pointed out. It was a safe bet. Certainly the Bothan scanners hadn't spotted the little beasts riding in on their incoming tech's clothing.
"Tell you the truth, I don't know if anyone really knows where they come from or how they get around. They just pop up now and then and make trouble. They probably came in with that equipment, though. You might want to catch a couple of them and use them to reprogram your scanners so they can't make any more trouble."
"Thank you,"
Tobias said a bit huffily. Apparently Bothans of his stature were not used to having the obvious pointed out to them.
"No problem,"
Navit said cheerfully. Earnest, but stupid. He was the type to take everything at full face value, without noticing any undertones.
"Glad we could help. And you'll get that merchant's license for us, right?"
"I will do what I can to help with it,"
Trebia said. Which was, Navit noticed, not precisely what he'd originally promised. But that was all right. In 6 days, if all went according to plan, Trebia would cease to exist, along with the city of Drevstarn, and as much of the rest of Bothawi as the Imperial Star Destroyers hidden out there could manage. And on that day, Navit planned to look down on the shattered world from one of those Star Destroyers and laugh. But for now, all he needed to do was smile.
"Great," he said cheerfully. "Thanks a lot. And if you guys ever need anything else, just give us a call."
He and Cliff didn't say anything to each other on the ride back to the pet shop. Nor did they speak once they were there. At least not about anything of substance, until they'd gone over each other thoroughly with the spy mic detector hidden in the bottom of the Doppelfly cage. But if Trebia didn't especially like them, he apparently wasn't overly suspicious of them either. The spy scan came up clean.
"Sloppy,"
Cliff grunted as they returned the detector back to its hiding place.
"You'd think they'd at least want to hear us slapping each other on the back about getting our license so cheap."
"I'm sure they back-checked our records before they called us in,"
Navit said, sniffing in disgust as he slapped at his shirt. That blasted Cordrahan stuck to everything.
"Did you get a chance to see where our power conduit came into the building? I never got to that side of the building."
"I saw it," Cliff nodded. "They've actually got a splice going off one of the power cables, probably ready to go to the new equipment Trebia mentioned."
"But they hadn't opened the wall, any?"
Cliff shook his head.
"They're not that stupid. No, the whole wall's still there."
"Fine,"
Navit said, shrugging. It would have been handy to have had some of that meter-thick, reinforced, heavily braced, multiple-layered, impenetrable wall out of their way. But it certainly wasn't necessary.
"I'm just worried about it taking another 6 days before we can spring this,"
Cliff continued.
"Won't the stuff we left there start to deteriorate?"
"Not a problem,"
Navit assured him.
"The tricky part now is going to be digging down to the power conduit from that Hodin place, and then cutting through it without setting off sensors from here to Odvistan."
"You think they've wired the conduit itself?"
"I would if I were in charge,"
Navit said.
"Horvick and Penson can get us into the place after hours. We won't have much time each night to work. Slow and steady is the way to go. And 6 days should be just about right."
"I suppose," Cliff said, sobering. "Of course, that assumes we even have 6 more days. Or have you finally decided to do something about those new rep agents?"
Abruptly, he snapped his fingers.
"Oh, blast!"
I just made that face. We're Gentiles.
You're right, Navid said, grimacing as the name belatedly clicked with Brown Eyes' face. General Wedge Antilles, leader of that multi-cursed rogue squadron. A single insignificant group of X-Wings that had probably caused the Empire more trouble than all the Bothans in the galaxy put together. And that's going to make things much more awkward. Even without New Republic celebrities involved, a triple murder would create a major fuss. He let his eyes drift around the shop, taking in the rows of cages, the subtle mix of smells and sounds. Surely Antilles wouldn't see any threat in a harmless pet shop. But no, they'd been standing right here when the call came through, and knew he and Cliff had been invited into the shield generator building. No, they'd have the pet shop marked now for sure. But I don't suppose we can afford to let them poke around anymore either, he conceded. I guess it's time we took them out.
Now you're talking, Cliff said with dark approval. You want me to take care of it?
Navid cocked an eyebrow.
What? All by yourself?
Hey, they're just X-Wing jucks, Cliff said. At least Antilles is. Outside the cockpits, they're babes in arms.
Maybe, Navid said.
But they found us, okay. And that old woman looks like she knows her way around, too.
Meaning? Navid gave him a tight smile.
Meaning you don't take them out by yourself, he said. We'll do it together.
Miranda sipped at her blue-green liqueur.
I don't know, she said, shaking her head. I can't say that any of them really leaped up and waved at me.
That's one way to put it,
Wedge said sourly, massaging his aching temples with thumb and middle finger. 50 different shops, businesses, service spots, and eating establishments. All of them set up in Drevstarn since the warships began gathering overhead. All of them visited personally by him, Corrin, and Miranda in the past 4 days. The business turnover rate on Bothawe must be astronomical.
Another way is to just admit we've hit another dead end.
I'm not sure I'd go quite that far, Corrin said slowly, meditatively swirling his drink around in its glass.
There were a couple of places that were definitely more on edge than others. That Meshakian jewelry owner, for one.
Stolen goods dealer,
Miranda dismissed him with a flip of her hand.
And he spotted us right off as anything but casual customers, by the way. You've really got to learn how to rein in that straight-backed Corsac stance of yours, Corrin.
And that Hojin Tapcalf,
Corrin continued, ignoring her as he ran a finger down their list.
It's sitting right on top of one of the power cable conduits to the generator building.
And it's been there for 10 years,
Miranda reminded him.
Except that the day manager mentioned they just hired a couple of humans for the late clean-up shift, remember?
Corrin countered.
There's something about that that bothers me.
Wedge eyed him over his cup. Corrin, he knew, had never had much luck with the mind-reading aspects of the Force. Not like Luke or Leia. But if he couldn't retrieve other people's thoughts, he could still pull out impressions and hints and textures. Combined with his old Corsac detective training, it meant that anything that bothered him was worth taking a hard look at.
And then, of course, Corrin added, there are our friends at the Exoticalia Pet Emporium.
Wedge looked at Miranda, waiting for her rebuttal, but it didn't come.
There's them, all right, she said instead,
frowning down at the tabletop.
I don't like that one at all.
I thought you said none of them jumped out at you,
Wedge reminded her.
No, they didn't, Miranda agreed. That's just the point. The pet guys acted just perfect. But how many pet shop owners do you know who also happen to be experts at getting rid of vermin? and exotic ones like metal mites yet.
We should be able to backcheck them and see if that kind of experience shows up in their records, Corin said. But he didn't look any happier than Miranda did. I just wish we knew where exactly this metal mite invasion had taken place.
Has to be someplace with really high security, Wedge said. They weren't even going to let them in at first.
And at the same time, that decision got overruled real quick, Miranda said, nodding. Some place with ultra-high security, but yet extremely sensitive and vital.
For a moment, the three of them looked at each other. Corin broke the silence first.
It's the shield generator building, he said. There's nothing else in Drevstan that fits.
Agreed, Miranda said, sipping at her drink. Question now is, was the metal mite incursion the attack or the bait? If it's the attack...
She broke off at a muffled beep from Wedge's comlink, buried deep in a pocket of his jacket.
Who knows you're here? She asked.
Our shuttle, Wedge told her, digging out the instrument. We set up a relay for any incoming transmissions.
Thumbing it on, he keyed for low volume.
Go Red 2,
he gave the code word. The message was very short.
This is Father,
Belliblis' familiar voice said.
All is forgiven. Come on home.
Wedge squeezed the comlink hard.
Acknowledged, he said. On our way.
He keyed the comlink off and looked up to find Corin's gaze hard on him.
Dad?
Wedge nodded.
Dad, he confirmed. Time to go home.
Meaning?
Miranda asked.
Meaning we have to leave, Wedge told her. Right now.
Oh, that's convenient,
Miranda growled, glaring at him.
What about the shield generator?
From now on, the Bothans are on their own,
Wedge said, draining his drink and sorting out coins onto the table.
I'm sorry, but we were only on temporary loan anyway.
Miranda grimaced, but nodded.
I understand, she said. Well, it was fun while it lasted.
You should probably give Bothan security a call,
Wedge said, standing up.
Point them to our friends at the pet shop.
Whatever, Miranda said, waving a hand. Happy flights.
Thanks, Wedge said. Come on, Corin.
Just a second, Corin said.
He hadn't moved from his chair, and there was a glint in his eyes as he looked at Miranda.
I want to know what Miranda's going to do now.
No, go on,
she chided him, making little shooing motions with her hands.
I'll be fine.
In other words, you're going to stay on this, he said bluntly.
She lifted her eyebrows.
That's very good. Corsac teach you how to do that?
You haven't answered the question,
Wedge said, sitting back down again.
You are going to call security, aren't you?
And tell them what? She countered. We don't have a scrap of proof. It's worse than that, really. They presumably already did a backcheck on Navit and his buddy, and they still let them into the generator building.
So what are you going to do?
Wedge persisted.
Stay on this by yourself?
Miranda's mouth set itself into hard lines.
I was given an assignment, Wedge, she said quietly. I'm supposed to stay here and watch for vengeance attempts against Bothawee.
Corin shook his head.
That's not a good idea, he said. If vengeance is being driven or guided by Imperials...
So where are you two off to?
Miranda demanded scornfully.
A vacation on the beaches of Burchest? I'll lay you 50-1. It'll be a lot more dangerous wherever you're going than anything I'm likely to run into here.
Miranda,
Wedge began.
Besides which, you don't have time to argue about it.
she cut him off.
If Dad is who I think he is, he's not going to be happy if you two get home late. Now scoot, both of you. Thanks for all the drinks.
Reluctantly, Wedge stood up again. She was right, of course, and she was certainly more than old enough to make this kind of decision for herself. But that didn't mean he had to like it. Come on, Corin. Miranda, you watch yourself, okay?
You too,
she said, smiling up at him.
Don't worry about me. I'll be just fine.
Chapter 26. There was a strange, almost unworldly aroma tugging at her senses as Mara drifted toward consciousness. Something strange, yet vaguely pleasant.
Good morning, Luke's voice came through the haze. With a jolt, Mara came fully awake. And in that first disorienting moment, wished she hadn't. Even as she opened her eyes to the dimly lit gloom around her, she suddenly became aware of 100 sparks of pain jabbing through her muscles, from her heels, through her legs and back, and right to the nape of her neck.
Ow!
She grunted under her breath. Luke's face appeared overhead, looking down at her with concern.
Is your shoulder still hurting?
He asked. Mara frowned, blinking away a little more of the haze clouding her mind. Right. Her badly burned shoulder. Craning her neck down, focusing eyes that still weren't entirely awake, she peered down at her charred jumpsuit. At her charred jumpsuit, and the smooth, unmarked skin showing through the hole there.
No,
she said, not quite believing it.
The shoulder feels just fine. It's... Oh, right. You're healing, Trance.
Some disorientation is normal when you first come out of it, Luke assured her. Don't worry.
I wasn't.
She eased her shoulders around, trying to ignore the extra wave of tingles the movement sent through her back. Luke's hand was there, gripping her arm and helping her sit up.
You said it was morning?
Well, afternoon, actually, Luke amended. But Han once told me that any time you woke up was technically morning.
That sounds like his casual slant on things,
Mara said.
How long, in real time, have I been lying there?
About 5 days, Luke told her.
Easy now. Oh, you bet,
she agreed, wincing as muscles that had been laid on for 5 straight days continued to complain loudly about their mistreatment.
I'm impressed. I don't think even a Bacta tank would have done the job that fast.
You have a strong force gift, Luke said, his hand hovering ready by her arm. That usually helps the healing process.
It's definitely one I'm going to have to learn, she decided, looking around.
That aroma she thought she dreamed was still there.
It's some kind of roast avian,
Luke explained, nodding toward the back of the landing. A wake-up gift to you from the Quam Ja.
Really?
Mara said, hoisting herself carefully to her feet and hobbling over there on unsteady legs. It was a roast avian, all right, simmering on a cooking pad.
Awfully nice of them. Where did you get the cooker?
I sent Keeper of Promises back to your defender for the rest of the survival gear, Luke explained. I'd rather have sent them back to my X-Wing. The spare kit card put together was a lot more complete. But after our brush with the Threateners, they're not all that eager to go roaming around outside.
This from the species that eats fire creepers raw?
Mara pointed out as she eased back into a sitting position by the cooking pad.
Pretty selective skittishness.
It's a little more complicated than that, Luke said, seating himself cross-legged on the floor across the cooking pad from her and gesturing toward the food. Hence the gift, actually. They've come to the conclusion that you saved their lives in there.
I don't know how they figure that,
Mara grunted, tearing off a piece of the roast.
We were the ones being shot at, not them.
Luke's lips puckered.
Actually, there's some question about that.
Splitter of Stones thinks it was the Kwamja who the Threateners were firing at, not us. At least not until you started shooting back. And as I've gone back through my memories of the battle, I think he's right.
Mara took a careful bite. The meat was a little overcooked for her taste, but not bad for all that. Anyway, as her loudly growling stomach reminded her, a person who hadn't eaten in 5 days couldn't afford to be too choosy.
Interesting thought, she said. But I'm not sure where it gets us. Whoever they were shooting at, the fact is they're still touchy about strangers.
Maybe, Luke said, his tone odd.
But maybe not. Haven't you wondered why the Threateners never came into the cave looking for you after you knocked yourself out?
Are you sure they didn't come in?
Mara countered around a mouthful of food.
The Kwamja say they didn't, Luke told her. There were a couple of flybys with their ships, and that was it. In fact, as far as Child of Winds knows, they never even conducted an outside ground search of the area.
Mara chewed thoughtfully, resisting the urge to point out that Child of Winds was not exactly the most reliable source of information around.
Okay,
she said.
Well, let's assume the Threateners lost interest in me. Where does that get us?
If they simply lost interest, I don't know, Luke said. But what if they didn't lose interest, but just decided to wait until you found your own way into the High Fortress? Mara took another bite. That was a disturbing thought. In fact, it was an extremely disturbing thought. All the more so since that exact course of action was one she had actually considered early in her captivity.
I don't know if Card mentioned it to you, she said slowly. But the way we found this system was by tracking the escape vectors from two of their ships to an intersect point. My assumption has always been that they simply didn't know we could track their vector for a few microseconds after they jumped to light speed. But now I'm not so sure.
You think they wanted you to come here?
It would fit with them not searching all that hard for me after I landed,
Mara pointed out.
Of course, if we argue that direction, we then have to come up with an explanation as to why they tried to shoot you down.
Maybe they're not interested in having more than one guest at a time, Luke suggested, gazing out into space. Or maybe they don't want to talk to anyone from the New Republic until they talk to you first. Mara eyed him closely. There had been a flicker in his emotions just then.
Is that just off the top of your head? She asked. Or are you getting something from the Force about it?
He shook his head, still gazing at nothing. I'm not sure, he admitted. But I have the feeling. No, never mind.
No, never mind what?
Mara demanded suspiciously, pressing at the corners of his mind.
Come on, we don't have time for games.
A muscle in his cheek twitched.
I get the feeling it's you they want to see, he said. You specifically.
Mara lifted her eyebrows.
I'm flattered. My fame just continues to spread.
Eater of Fire Creepers did say they'd heard the Threateners talking about you, Luke reminded her. I wish we knew the context of the conversation. There was a flapping from the stairway, and one of the Kwamja appeared. It spoke.
Rot! Let's rot!
Thank you, Flyer Through Spikes, Luke said. Go see if Keeper of Promises has any news, if you would. The Kwamja replied, and with a flurry of wings was gone down the stairway. I've had some of the Kwamja patrolling the upper areas of the stairway and listening for activity outside the doors, Luke explained. Flyer Through Spikes tells me the upper areas of the fortress were active for a while this morning, but they seem to be quiet again.
Ah,
Mara said, tearing off another bite with perhaps a bit more force than necessary. Those blasted Kwamja and their blasted unintelligible voices.
Something wrong? Luke asked.
Mara glared at him.
You know, Skywalker, it's really hard to keep any thoughts to yourself when you're around.
He gave her an innocent look that had far too much amusement in it for her taste.
Odd. I seem to remember a situation not too long ago when you couldn't wait to unload some of those choicer thoughts on me.
Mara grimaced.
Feeling a little more cheerful about our past mistakes this morning, are we?
He sobered.
Not cheerful, no, he said.
Just learning how to acknowledge them, learn from them, and then pick up and move on. I've had a lot of time for thinking during these past 5 days, you know.
You reach any particular conclusions?
He looked straight at her.
I know why you didn't turn to the dark side, he said. And why you keep coming up against limits on what you can do through the Force.
With a casualness she didn't especially feel, Mara took another bite and settled her back against the stone wall behind her.
I'm listening.
The essence of the dark side is selfishness, Luke said. The elevation of yourself and your own desires above everything else.
Mara nodded.
Fairly obvious so far.
The point is that all the time you were serving the Emperor, you were never doing so out of selfish motives, Luke said. You were serving, even if it was Palpatine and his own selfish ends. And service to others is the essence of being a Jedi.
Mara thought about that.
No,
she said, shaking her head.
No, I don't like it. Service to evil is still evil. What you're saying is that doing something wrong isn't really wrong if your motives are good. That's nonsense.
I agree, Luke said. But that's not what I'm saying. Some of the things you did were certainly wrong. But because you weren't doing them for your own purposes, the acts themselves didn't open you to the dark side.
Mara glowered at her food.
I see the difference,
she said.
But I still don't like it.
Actually, it's not that much different from the situation with the Jen Sa'ari that Corrin and I ran into on Susapai, Luke said. They didn't know how to be Jedi, but were still serving the best they knew how.
And in the process had gotten themselves so bent around that you were years untwisting them,
Mara reminded him tartly.
Anyway, they at least had the memory of a role model to follow, didn't they? That what's-his-name Jedi?
Nikos Tyrus, Luke said, nodding.
Which brings up an even more interesting thought. Maybe you had a role model, too.
Mara shook her head.
Not a chance. There wasn't a single person in the inner court with a scrap of what I'd consider virtue or morality.
Then maybe it was someone in your life before you were taken to Coruscant, Luke suggested. Your parents, or some close friend.
Mara bit off the last bite of her meal and tossed the carcass back into a corner.
This is a dead-end conversation,
she declared firmly, wiping her hands on her jumpsuit legs where the oils and grime would eventually flake off.
Let's get back to the job at hand. Where did you stash my blaster?
Luke didn't move.
I know you don't remember much about your past, he said quietly. For whatever it's worth, I understand how you feel.
Thanks,
Mara growled.
That certainly helps.
Would you like to have the past back again?
She frowned at him, conflicting emotions surging suddenly against each other.
What do you mean?
She asked cautiously.
There are techniques Jedi can use to pull out buried memories, he said. And you could be a Jedi, Mara. You could be a powerful Jedi.
Right,
Mara bit out.
All I have to do is declare I'm ready to serve the galaxy, right?
Luke's forehead creased, and she caught the flicker of puzzlement from him.
What is it about that scares you?
He asked.
You've served and worked with people all your life. Palpatine, Card, Leia and Han, and me. And once you've offered your loyalty, it's for keeps.
You can do this. I know you can.
Mara squeezed her hand into a fist, half-minded to close the subject again, and this time make sure she sat on the lid. But deep inside, she knew he deserved an answer on this one.
I can't just offer that kind of blank-line invitation, she said. Sure, I can be loyal, but only to the people I choose to be loyal to. I'm not ready to open myself up to anyone who walks in off the street.
She grimaced.
Besides, I keep remembering stories about how the last step to becoming a Jedi is usually making some supreme and rather ugly personal sacrifice. I'm not crazy about that one either.
It's not always as bad as it seems, Luke said. And Mara could sense his discomfort as unpleasant memories of his own floated back to the surface.
Just before he died, Master Yoda told me that before I would truly be a Jedi, I needed to face Vader again. I jumped to the conclusion that meant I had to either kill him or let him kill me. As it turned out, it didn't happen either way.
But you had to be willing to make that sacrifice if necessary,
Mara pointed out.
Thanks, but I'm not interested.
Then you automatically limit your capabilities, Luke said. If you aren't willing to make a commitment...
Commitment?
Mara snorted.
You're the one telling me about commitment? What about Callista? Or Garia? Or any of the other women you've brushed paths with over the past 10 years? Where's been the commitment there?
Luke's flash of anger was so sudden and so unexpected, it physically shocked her back against the stone wall.
You should talk, he snapped. What about Lando, huh?
For a long moment, they just glared at each other. Mara held her breath, bracing herself for another outburst. Stories of uncontrolled Jedi anger running ominously through her mind. But instead, she felt his anger drain away, replaced by shame and a deep embarrassment.
I'm sorry, he said, dropping his eyes away from her face.
That was uncalled for.
No, I'm the one who should apologize,
Mara said, trying to hide her own guilt feelings from him and knowing she was being only partly successful. She knew better than to fight like that.
I know how you felt about those women and what happened to them. I'm sorry.
It's all right, Luke murmured. What happened to them was probably partly my fault. Maybe even mostly my fault. I'm the one who dabbled in the dark side, not them.
You acknowledge your mistakes and learn from them,
Mara reminded him.
Then you pick up and move on. It's time to pick up and move on,
I suppose. Still not looking at her, he climbed to his feet.
You're right. We should get moving. I had the Quam Ja make some measurements while you were sleeping. And it looks like the upper door out of here should let us out into one of the top 3 floors of the fortress. Let's try that approach.
Just a second,
Mara said, looking up at him. She had promised herself, rather cavalierly, she realized in retrospect, that she wasn't going to tell him this until he point-blank asked her about it. But her silence was childish. Anyway, the accusation he'd just thrown in her face was probably close enough.
You wanted to know about Lando and me, right?
She saw the twitch in his neck.
That's all right, he said.
It's really none of my business.
I'm making it your business,
Mara said, getting to her feet so she could look him straight in the eye.
What was between Lando and me was absolutely nothing.
His eyes flicked suspiciously to hers.
What do you mean?
I mean just what I said. Absolutely nothing,
she repeated.
Card had an important mission for me to carry out. And because Lando had supplied the starting point, he invited himself along. The, well, personal aspects to the whole thing were nothing but window dressing to keep people from figuring out what we were up to.
She could feel Luke probing at the edges of her mind.
You could have told me, he said, not quite accusingly.
You could have asked me,
she countered.
You never seemed all that interested.
He grimaced, and she could feel a fresh wave of embarrassment wash over him.
I didn't, did I?
He admitted.
You learn and move on,
Mara reminded him.
Actually, if you want to come right down to it, you were the one who got the whole thing started in the first place. Remember that beck and call you found on Dagobah and took to Lando's place on Niklon?
Luke looked at her sharply.
Yes. In fact, I was just thinking about it a few days ago. I wondered why it had suddenly come to mind. Proddings of the Force, no doubt,
Mara said. It was as good an answer as any.
It turns out that particular beck and call used to belong to someone Card once knew, who had dropped out of sight some years back. A fellow named Georges Cardass. Ever hear of him?
Luke shook his head.
No. Apparently not a lot of people have, she said. Made things so much more challenging. Anyway, with the beck and call, we had a starting point, and Card asked me to try and track him down. And as I said, Lando, smelling profit, no doubt, insisted on tagging along.
Must have been a long search, Luke murmured. The stories of you and Lando...
It took some years,
Mara said.
Off and on work, of course.
She lifted her eyebrows.
For whatever it's worth, the romance part of the cover story drove me crazy. Finding Cardass was important to Card, so I stuck with it. Like you said, loyalty.
She hissed gently between her teeth with the memories.
Though it did prove exceptionally embarrassing at times. There was one particular week on Mahaley where Lando was trying to sugar-talk the Vice Baron Sicarian out of some information we needed. I had to become a giddy, vacant-brained bit of decorative fluff, because Sicarian automatically put that class of woman beneath his contempt, and the role gave me the freedom of movement I needed. The worst part was that Solo caught me in the act with a comm relay when I thought it was Sicarian calling. I've never quite had the nerve to ask him what he thought of that.
I don't think it would have ruined his opinion of you,
Luke said, his voice an odd mixture of support, gallantry, and lingering embarrassment.
Though I imagine Sicarian's opinion is probably beyond repair at this point.
Oh, I don't think so.